You know, Bob, I think after nearly 3 years, it's time to upgrade the recording studio.
Well, that makes sense.
These are my plans.
Wow, this is impressive. Now, wait, what's this?
That's the Osaki 3D Dreamer V2. It's a zero-gravity chair with built-in heat therapy. It has 5 massage programs and surround sound Bluetooth speakers. $3,000.
Wow, fancy. What about these?
Oh, that's the Cosmo Glow Light Bundle and Phone Clip. It's a light bar designed for professionals. We can have shadow-free lighting and a 360-degree rotating halo. Plus, we can use the phone clip to make videos of our work without interrupting the podcast. $500.
I guess that's important. And all of this?
Oh, the Privacy Ultimate Floated Floor System with a 3/8-inch thick acoustical map under 2 layers of plywood to create a completely floated subfloor to maximize low-frequency noise blocking. I also added the acoustical foam with custom red and green colors, too. $10,000.
Well, this is all well and good, but you forgot one thing.
Oh, what's that?
Me. There's only one chair and no room for another with all this gear.
Oh, right. Well, maybe you can call in. Call me, beep me, if you want to reach me. Yeah,
yeah. The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them. Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and crazy guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans! Well, hey, Mark.
Hi, Bob. You know, you sound a little winded. What's going on?
Mark, I gotta tell you, I'm exhausted. I have spent the last couple of weeks in tax mode. It's that time of year, you know. I've been reviewing all the financial records, reporting income, claiming deductions. And then I realized that you, Jake, and I, we don't earn anything. After all that, I guess it's a relief, I suppose. Mark, the whole tax thing, I have to tell you, like, I love Christmas and I hate when it's over. But one of the reasons why I hate when it's over is because I know the next thing that's coming along is going to be tax season. I find the whole process to be overwhelming. I know it gives you a chance to go through and see financially how you're doing. And I always think, oh, I'm going to get a big refund, and I never do.
I hate when that happens.
It's stressful for me, and I'll tell you, it's kind of a weird reason why. I sit there, and I'm doing everything right. I'm scrutinizing every receipt, reviewing every number, questioning every financial decision I made for the year. But for some reason, I just feel guilty. Like, just the fact of having to file my taxes, somehow it triggers this nagging sense like I'm doing something wrong.
Wow, guilty conscious?
Not at all. I'm so particular. I go through everything, but it's just so weird. It's like having someone look over your shoulder. But the funny thing is you're like, okay, Bob, we have our happy, upbeat Christmas podcast, and you're complaining about the taxes. Well, Mark, I was thinking about this, and guess what? This tax season reminded me of that census that was ordered by Caesar Augustus. So Caesar, he wanted to update his tax records and ensure that he was doing proper taxation in ancient times. So we all know what happened. Joseph and Mary, they had to travel from Nazareth to Bethlehem just to register in that census. So I'm sitting here thinking, I'm mad because I can't locate the receipt that I had for the Auntie Anne's pretzel at O'Hare when I was traveling. And I'm thinking, poor Joseph was required to return to his ancestral town to register. And not only that, he also had to fulfill that Old Testament prophecy that the Messiah was going to be born in Bethlehem. He couldn't even skip it.
Sounds like the more you think about this, the little more humbled you are.
I am, because, yes, okay, it's a lot of paperwork and filing documents. But I'm thinking, I didn't have to lace up my sandals and go on a journey of 90 miles.
That's right.
They walked 7 to 10 miles a day. And poor Mary sitting on a donkey. I don't think that's in the Bible, but we do know she was very pregnant.
I don't know if riding on the donkey or walking would have been better. I guess if you were 9 months pregnant, riding would be better.
Yeah, you're going to take the donkey.
I'm sitting on his deck, drinking a beer, worrying about his taxes.
Looking for my Goodwill donation receipt.
Marielle, how much was that sweater you bought me? I say $1,000.
No long, dusty roads. No lodging that's not available. We all should reflect on this, that no matter how much we hate the tax season, at least we don't have to follow an emperor's decree to be counted. I think I can deal with 1099s and W-2s.
I guess the one thing, though, that Mary and Joseph didn't have to face, is we have to file taxes every year. Did they only have to file them once?
That's interesting you asked this question, because I really started to look into this. So Caesar realized his records weren't accurate. And so he did the census to make sure that he was collecting enough taxes. I don't know how frequently he did it, but people don't like someone coming to their house to count how many people they are. Can you imagine if the president said, you got to walk 90 miles or go back to your hometown? You'd have to go way more than 90 miles.
It would be. It's 723.
Yeah, you better start walking.
Honey, we're going for a ride.
Oh, yeah, get the donkey. We got to go. Well, Mark, before we get to tonight's movie, there is still one remaining question from last episode. Where was that treaty signed that ended the 3.5-year Bosnian War in 1995 and that created Bosnia and Herzegovina? Now, Mark, you had so many great answers. You had Versailles, you had Appomattox, Paris. Usually our trivia questions are a bit offbeat, and this one seems very straightforward. It's really because it was such an odd location where they ended up. This treaty was signed in Dayton, Ohio, and it's called the Dayton Accords.
Wait.
It's signed in Dayton, Ohio. Dayton isn't even the biggest city in Ohio. It's the sixth largest. They didn't even go to Cleveland, where they could have at least gone to the Rock and Roll Museum.
Yeah. I mean, Columbus, they could have went to see the Ohio State game. No. Cincinnati. They went to Dayton?
Dayton, Ohio is the location of the formal end of the Bosnian War, which is considered one of the deadliest conflicts in Europe since World War II. And there they were.
It's got to be a Now, the only thing that comes to mind, Bob, is that the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is in Dayton. But that's the only thing I can come up with.
Mark, you're right on. That's exactly why. You come up with this stuff. Listeners, I have to tell you, Mark and I have done these trivia contests, not Christmas trivia, trivia contests. And Mark was always great to have on your team for these really obscure categories like the spices of the world or national parks.
My brother lived in Miamisburg, right outside of Dayton, and his company did work at the Wright-Patterson Air Force. But I would have never guessed Dayton, Ohio.
I know, the Dayton Accords. It's crazy.
Should we talk about our movie?
Yes, we shall.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
So tonight's movie, as you mentioned last show, it's called Snow Over Kigali, and it's in Rwanda. And just to remind our listeners, if you missed the end of the last show, we talked about how this movie hasn't even been released yet, but because Bob's so well connected in the film industry, he was able to get us access. And so I'm just tickled to death to review this movie, knowing that no one else has probably reviewed it.
It'll be our quotes on the movie poster. the festive foreign film fans say, better than Gone with the Wind.
The next Home Alone.
Well, let's dive in. Before, like we always do, let's talk about two of the main actors. The one actor we'll talk about who plays Patrick is Felix Kruttke. Felix is a German actor and musician. He gained his first acting experience as a teenager in the film Zumgagerstag, which is Happy Birthday.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I wonder what that means.
He also worked as a runway model in Paris and Milan, just like Bob. Felix is also an active singer-songwriter and a guitar player who has years of martial arts training.
Just like Mark.
Right. Our other actress that we'll highlight is Corazon Herbestoffer. Corazon is a German actress of Kenyan descent. She was born in the Kenyan port city of Kisumu. When she was just 9, her mother immigrated to Germany. When friends told her about a casting call for a new episode of a crime series on television, she went to the audition and was immediately signed.
You hear sometimes that this happens and you just show up and suddenly overnight you're like a star.
I wonder if it was the look she had, because she's a very pretty woman, or if it was a special talent, or did they just have somebody in mind? I'm still hoping, Bob, someone's going to see me somewhere and say, you know what? We need someone to play a dead guy. And you look like a dead guy. So we're going to cast you.
Niche roles. Not many people look like dead guys.
So in the 3 years that followed after the series, Corazon withdrew from acting. So she had this initial hit. And it wasn't until 2016 that Corazon, who speaks English, Swahili, German, and French, returned to regular acting work.
I wonder if she went to school or something. You go to an audition, you get in a popular crime series, and then you take off. It's just...
It is very interesting. Then the last one is Ethan, who's the little boy. Salvador Eason plays Ethan, and this appears to be Salvador's first film. Those are the main people that we're going to cover. This film is one of those films, too, that is told in layers. You see the movie evolve, and you see a bunch of things happen, and you're like, wait a minute, how do we get here? And then you bring in a different character who's experiencing the same timeline as the first actor, but now there's more added to it.
Do you like that style?
Yes, but it's funny, though, when I watched the first part, when they're talking about Ethan's journey, I'm like, wait a minute. How did that happen? How did he get there? It's like sometimes, though, it's a good lesson, whether you're reading a good story or listening to a song or watching a movie. Sometimes you just got to relax and watch it.
Yeah, let it wash over you. First, you see someone walk in front of a car. You see it from one direction. Then later on in the movie, you see it from inside the car. The exact same scene, just from a different perspective.
Do you like it?
I do. It's unusual.
But this story is a love story. It's about wanting to belong, connecting to someone or something. It's about family and really the many ways we define family. But the story opens up with a man running and there's another person running behind him and encouraging him to run along. And it goes to a flashback. So early in the movie, we learn about there's this young boy named Ethan. He goes to school in Rwanda. The kids are making fun of him because he's a little lighter shade than the other black children. They're teasing him about that. They have nicknames for him. And it obviously upsets him. And so he runs home and he starts talking to his mom, Rachel. We learn a little bit about Rachel. Right? She runs a hotel. We learn that she was a runner and a very good runner. We also learned that his dad was a bronze medal winner at the same time. So this was back in the 2004 Berlin Olympics. Rachel shows Ethan a picture, and Ethan sees this picture of his mom in front of this tower, and he's wanting and feels this connection to go back to Berlin. So he tells his friend Leary about it. Hey, I'm going to run off and go to Berlin. I'm going to find this place. It's going to sort of give him some meaning. He also wants to go to Berlin because it always snows there, right? And he's been spending his life in Rwanda. He has a saying that his grandma tells him, trust in God and you'll always find the way. In this part of the movie, all of a sudden, you see him getting on the bus, going to the airport, and next thing you know, he's walking around in Berlin. A streetwalker helps him find his way.
How'd you like how he got there, too, the money to get there?
What's funny though, Bob, in that first part, we know nothing about the money.
No,
that's exactly
yeah.
right. Remember? I'm like, oh, how the hell did he buy
it? I know. How did a kid get there? Yeah.
In retrospect, when I watched it the second time, stop asking so many damn questions and watch the darn movie, Mark. So he gets to Berlin. He gets helped along the way. I love the little line where he says, a secret and a treasure have one thing in common. They are nothing until you have the courage to go after them. Sort of sets this mood where he's exploring and wanting to know and understand. And so he's at this monument and all of a sudden this man approaches him. Hey, I know you type of thing. And this man's name is Nick and he takes him all over town. And you're like, wait a minute. How did he, who's this guy? How did he get there? Why is he going with him? Right. And I meet like, oh, Nick, it's Saint Nick. Yeah, that's what this is. This is going to be Saint Nick.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Well, I'm filling in all the blanks because I'm just a stupid American impatient movie watcher. Nick tells Ethan that in 4 days it'll snow. It always snows on Christmas Eve in Berlin. Nick takes this boy home and he and his wife have a daughter. And all of a sudden, this part of the story ends when Nick's wife says, Nick, is that your child? And he's like, I don't know. And you're like, oh, wait a minute here.
Yeah.
What's happening? They begin to spend time together, Nick and his wife and their daughter. Then all of a sudden you're like, okay, let's go back. I can see this story from a different angle. And this is where Esther, who is Ethan's aunt, who is a black woman dating a white man, she is absolutely in love with Patrick. Of course, they're drawing all kind of attention as they're going through Rwanda, seeing a black woman and a white man. I was a little surprised that that was still an issue in Rwanda. It certainly seemed like people were watching them. They didn't seem to care about it, but a little hint of racism there.
In the same way with Ethan and the color of his skin. I wanted to, but I couldn't figure out the word that they called him. I was wondering what it meant, because I think right. they were saying, are you half and half?
That's what I took it to be. I couldn't find the actual meaning of it. That's what I thought so, too. We learned that Patrick is just about ready to leave for Berlin. He's going back to medical school. He picks her up. She thinks that they're going out on a date and that they're going to have a nice time. But in reality, they're actually going to the airport for Patrick to say goodbye to Esther.
I didn't like Patrick at first. I did not like him.
No, what a creep. That, hey, let's go on a date. I'll pick you up. Oh, by the way, I'm leaving. Goodbye. It's been fun knowing you, right? This is sort of where the story starts to overlay a little bit, too, where Rachel goes back to her house, finds out that Ethan is missing, learns that they think that Ethan is on his way to Berlin. Well, she knows that Patrick's going to Berlin, so she calls him and says, hey, you got to watch out for my nephew. He's trying to board a plane to go to Berlin. And so Patrick finds him. Well, we find out that Esther's ex-boyfriend helps him and gets him on the plane and to Berlin. We also find, too, at the same time during the story, that a gentleman shows up at the hotel looking for Esther. And we find out, too, that this man has left his credit card at the front desk to cover his charges. Ethan ends up getting there because he stole this credit card. He ends up being able to get to Berlin because of Patrick helping him. We also find out that Rachel figures out, okay, wait a minute, I know why he's going to Berlin. And so that's how she contacts Nick. Because we find out later on, too, that Nick and Esther are both runners. Competed in the Olympics. We also find out, too, that Esther is pregnant. She is trying to decide what she's going to do with the baby, and she decides she's going to maybe go to a clinic. It seems like she's going to end the pregnancy. Meanwhile, back in Berlin, Patrick tells his dad about this woman, because I think when Patrick is on his way to Berlin, he sort of understands, like, I really do love her.
Yeah.
And he goes and tells his dad about this relationship with Esther. And his dad is very against the mixed marriages, says some derogatory things about mixed marriages. And so Patrick is
not getting support from his dad.
But so, this is when I start liking Patrick.
I like Patrick because he's able to help Ethan connect with Nick. So he kind of oversaw him. At the same time, we find out this man wants to meet and talk to Esther about something. He wants to talk to Esther. He finds out at the hotel that Esther has gone to the clinic. And so Ethan connecting with Nick, Patrick is having second thoughts about his love for Esther. And you have Esther who's trying to decide about whether she should keep this baby, and this man who's trying to track Esther down to talk to him. Now it all starts to come together. By this time in the movie, I personally am like, okay, I'm cool. I can go with this. Just kind of relive the whole story over again. And what we're finding out, missing pieces, is that this gentleman who's been looking for Esther is actually someone who has news for her, because he comes to tell her that recently his wife has died and that his wife had the last wish before she died. He tells Esther a story about how there was this woman who, during the unrest during the Rwanda wars, had been captured and raped by some of the Rwandan army, and she became pregnant. She wanted to flee the country, but was convinced by a friend, who actually would have been Rachel's mom, to leave the baby with Rachel's mom. This woman turns out to be Esther's mom, who's there telling be Esther's stepfather. There to say, and her name was Deborah's. Deborah's last wish was for you to know the whole story. And of course, this freaks out Esther, right? She's like, wait a minute. I thought Rachel and I were sisters, that we had the same mom. And it really turns out that they're not actually even blood related at all. And that this gentleman, who's now her stepdad, he wants to have a relationship with her and wants to be there to help her and support her. When he finds out she's at the clinic, goes to the clinic and tries to talk to her about this story and really talk to her about the decision she's making. Meantime, Patrick decides to fly back to Rwanda because he loves her so much. And he finds out about the baby and finds out where Esther is. Like you said, Bob, Patrick starts at negative 10 and works his really way up the ladder. This dude is standing up for it, but he stands up and comes back and says, Esther, I do love you so much. I was kind of overwhelmed with the whole idea of med school and everything else, but I want to marry you. I want to take you back to Berlin and have you meet my family.
It's like they toy with our emotion. They make us not like him, and then they bring us back.
And so the next thing you know, Patrick is asking for her hand in marriage to some of her family and to get her endowment. I think he offers cows, goats.
That was hilarious, that scene.
It's a little bit of old culture. So you have a couple things going on now. Patrick wants to marry Esther. You have her stepdad who wants to have a relationship with her. But you still have poor Ethan, who's hanging out with Nick over in Berlin. And so Rachel and Rachel's husband say, well, we better get to Berlin too. So now Rachel and her husband, Esther and Patrick, and now her stepdad are all on their way to Berlin. It does turn out that everybody gets together there. It's like one big family. So you see Esther with her husband and you see Nick all together. And as it turns out, Nick is Ethan's dad.
Yeah.
But Rachel's husband really is his father. He's raised him. He's been good to him.
And didn't you like the good-natured ribbing? Like, I'm his dad.
Yeah. No, you think he says, you're his father, but I'm his dad.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So that sort of resolves itself. Right at the end, there's just big party. So this big festive gathering where Esther is there with Patrick, with Patrick's dad, who just is drinking a lot. So he seems like he's okay. But then out of nowhere, I missed this like in the early part of the movie. Patrick's mom is a lesbian. And so she's there with her partner. And I think, how much diversity can you have in one?
Oh, I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, the one who's like, she's kind of like mean. And then finally she says, this is my partner. Well, that came out of nowhere. I mean, this is sort of like, how you're defining family and how this big family is. You just have all these people are coming together who are going to now celebrate Christmas in Berlin. And of course, it snows. You know,
yes,
it's right, right at the end of the movie. I mean, I'll ask you, do you think this movie was festive?
You know what? I really did. Although the Christmas part of it isn't overly emphasized. And I guess in Rwanda, you don't see much in the way of decorations or anything, but right. I love the party at the end and how it all culminates with a Christmas party. And you talk about the different cultural elements with the proposal. And then what I was shocked by, and maybe I shouldn't be, but how understanding Nick's wife was. Like, this kid shows up, is this your son?
Yeah.
Let's invite him in with the family. And it was just very tolerant, very diverse, very open, and very festive.
Well, I wonder too, they never explored this. You bring up a really good point, because did Nick even know he had a son? So I wonder if the tolerance from his wife is the fact that maybe it wasn't that he was hiding a secret. It's not like he always knew he had Ethan as a son and didn't tell her. And so they were mutually discovering this child together. And did that make it just maybe more amenable to her, because he's just as shocked as she is that he has a son?
That is such an interesting question, because I thought he knew where to go because of the picture. But still, that doesn't mean that he would have known that was his son, though. You're right.
Right. I think Rachel contacted Nick to say, and again, maybe he did know, but I thought, well, Rachel contacted Nick because you knew they were friends because they were in the picture together.
Right.
And you knew they both ran in the Olympics. And so I think she may have called him to say, look, my son, Ethan, is coming there. Now, what you don't know, did she say, our son, Ethan, is coming there?
Yeah.
Or my son is, and oh, by the way, I think you are the father. That part is out of the story, so which I'm fine with. Like, you kind of have to fill in the blanks a little bit. But
yeah, because a wife could have said, he kind of looks like you or something. Now I've got to go back and watch it again.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the more we talk about. I mean, I think it was pretty festive. The party at the end, the building up to Christmas, the snow anticipating.
The snow always gets me.
Oh, yeah. Would you watch this again? Would you recommend it?
I would watch it again, only because I found that in the second watching, because I watched it twice, I learned more. And actually listening to you describe, I've learned even more. And I want to go back, and partly I think it's in the storytelling, because it purposely leaves certain things out, then shows you them later. You have to go back and think about what happened at the beginning. So I would watch it again. Would I recommend it as a Christmas movie? I'm not so sure. Even though I say it's festive, for some reason didn't get a really strong Christmassy feeling from it.
Yeah, I could see that. I would say I would definitely watch it again. In fact, after we talked about this more, I think I'm going to go watch it again.
Me too.
You've made me think about some of the scenes. I would recommend it to watch. Yeah, I think it's a fair point about how I would recommend it. We didn't talk about this. How did you feel watching it?
At first, I'm very questioning. How did he do that? Because they're purposely leaving gaps. And I think almost to make you question it. And then when they start filling it in, it's more fulfilling. It's great. Oh, this is all coming together. And you love how it all pieces together. And I really did appreciate that, other than Patrick's family, who were not very good. But the people are decent people, all of them. The husband, his wife dies, and this is not even his daughter. He fulfills the wife's wish. Patrick turns around and becomes amazing. He fulfills this relationship. The dads have no problem with each other. These are all great people. If I go back and watch it, I'm going to be paying much more attention. Does he know that Ethan's his son or not? Is there anything that tips you off one way or the other?
So I would say definitely worth a watch.
Definitely but worth being on the red carpet.
It definitely is. If the director and actors are listening to this, I would love to meet you. Just send me your credit card and I'll book a flight. So, Bob, guess what? They actually say Merry Christmas in Rwanda. They speak Kinyarwanda.
Kinyarwanda
is their language. It was spoken by 15 to 18 million people. But guess how they say Merry Christmas?
How do they say it?
They say Nohili Niza.
Christmas. Say that well.
You know what? You say that, but I don't know. You can also use the phrase Tobi furaha noli niza, which means wishing you a Merry Christmas.
I think I'll stick with the Nohili Niza.
If you actually say it slow, it's like Tubi Furaha Noi Naza. And that means wishing you a Merry Christmas. Kirwanda is the official language. They also speak it in Uganda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The other official languages in Rwanda are English, French, and Kiswahili. Kirwandu is one of the Bantu languages, which are closely related to 600 different dialects.
Do you notice recently, it seems like the last couple of countries we've looked at, they've had several official languages.
I was trying to think, how many dialects do we have in the United States?
I would say a handful. Yeah. I know they speak a Creole language in Louisiana. I don't know if there's one in Appalachia, maybe. Yeah. I don't think there's very many.
Bob, I'll get lost on this stuff. I'm thinking like 600. And then I start thinking like, what about the United States? Is Southern accent a dialect? I mean, they have different words. When I came out to the Midwest, the piece of my house that covers my house, people around here call it a rough. It's a roof back in Pennsylvania. So is that a dialect? I mean, these are the things that literally will keep me up at night. I don't know about you, but it keeps me up.
That's so funny. Yeah. And just think about, though, if you lived in Rwanda, then you'd have to think about 600 different ways they're saying something very similarly.
And what if I insult somebody? Anyway, Kirwanda is nearly identical to Kirunda, the national language of the neighboring Burundi. The speakers of both languages can understand each other. So some of these dialects overlap. And the Kirwanda language is also known to have a complex noun system where there are 16 different variations, and it's also tonal in nature. So how you click, how you roll your R is just going to make a difference in whether or not you're insulting someone or speaking to them nicely.
16 nouns. So they must have different nouns for present, past, future. Could you imagine that?
No. Anyway, they have some really cool customs if you'd like to hear about them.
I would love to hear them.
So Christmas in Rwanda is more of a religious holiday. The emphasis is on church going and family gathering and big meals, thank God. Churches will often prepare for days, which is also very interesting, right? They decorate with local flowers and candles. The rural parishes will be full. They'll hold evening services that will often draw the entire village with children and parents and elderly all coming together, which I think is so cool. The services are filled with song and prayer and nativity drama, so they act out the nativity. Worshippers, especially in poorer areas, will hear prayers and hymns and messages centered on hope and gratitude and unity. Beyond celebrating the birth of Christ, people also pray for good harvests and better health and peace in the community. Well, I think that's pretty global. Rwandans consider Christmas to be a time to give thanks for making it through the year and for asking for strength for the upcoming year. The services start early and continue until midnight. And then children often recite verses and choirs will perform. There's dancing. And at midnight, the bells ring and all the church member attendees embrace each other.
Everybody dressed up and they all turned out almost like a revival meeting.
For many families, Christmas is one of the few days of the year when meat is part of the meal, which is likely going to be a grilled goat. Many Rwandans in remote areas save their money for the whole year to be able to serve meat on Christmas. Across several rural districts, there's a tradition of collectively slaughtering a cow or a goat for a Christmas Day barbecue. So they will contribute funds together and they agree on what animal to purchase and then they share the meal amongst participating families. Now that's the meaning of Christmas there.
Yeah, and probably it's the only way communally they could afford it.
That's exactly right. That with people with limited means can be part of a larger meal. Because not every family can certainly buy meat for Christmas or even have a cow to slaughter. It's just a way to bring everybody together. Then early in afternoon on Christmas Day, wood fires will be lit across the entire nation. Most will be 3 stone fires, but some may use a metal grate to support the large bounty. I'm not an expert at this, but I think they build fires to get the rocks hot, and then they cook the meat right on the hot rocks. And then for many Rwandans, Christmas is not about shopping or buying presents. It's about making sure no one celebrates alone or goes without food.
You think about, oh, how sad it is that they can only afford the meat once a year. But I'm thinking what this does, though, it really focuses the attention on what Christmas is about and what Absolutely. It's for. It's the community coming together and sharing. They may not have all the things that we have, but their celebration sounds much more meaningful.
And it even goes beyond the food too, Bob. There's these groups of collective savings that are known as Ibamina and Ibasabani, which is like a informal credit unions. And people will contribute sums of money throughout the year. And not only do they rely on us to prepare for the food like we talked about, but it's also a way for them to get clothes for the children and have these communal celebrations. There's an argument that Christmas is more meaningful because it's planned collectively and the whole community plays a part. So you think about that, right? There's these communities collecting money who then use it to buy food, buy presents, but it's everything is done as one community. Like, could you imagine our little town of Cary all coming together, contributing money together, and planning out and getting everyone to agree about how the holiday should be built? And I'm not just picking on Cary, right?
When you think about the practical reality of it or the difficulty, what's amazing to me, though, is I was thinking, you know, because it's your neighbors, I bet it helps people to forcibly save. They make a commitment, and I'm going to give this dollar a week or whatever. And because they're giving it to someone they know, they probably make sure that they pay it.
So let's talk a little bit about food.
Ooh.
It's not Christmas in Rwanda without isombe. This is a favorite stew made from boiled cassava leaves mixed with other ingredients such as tomatoes and eggplant, spinach, onions, cilantro, garlic, and Mark's favorite, peanut butter.
Really?
It has a meaty flavor, although it contains no meat because the stock is created from boiled beef bones. Isombe is traditionally served with rice, beans, or ugali on the side. It's served as a celebratory dish during Christmas. Ibotke, or green bananas plantains, is another rich dish served during Christmas. The bananas are steamed or boiled until they're soft. Then the bananas are pounded afterwards, and then various spices and ingredients are added to create an aromatic dish. They use spices like cumin and coriander and turmeric, as well as onions, tomatoes, coconut milk, and peanuts.
Now, I'm going to show my ignorance. Are peanuts from Africa? Because it's two references to peanut butter and then peanuts.
I'm going to share that ignorance with you. I don't know about it. I mean, if you think about where peanuts grow, it's usually in a dry heat, right? So you think about a lot of the peanuts are grown in the southern part of the United States. And so I don't know if it's a natural plant there. After they do this, they serve with a peanut sauce accompanied by beans and grilled meats and fresh fruits like mangoes and pineapple for a festive gathering. So it sounds like you kind of dip other things in it. Another popular staple is a favorite local, it's a spice specifically to this region called Akabanga, which is a famous Rwandan hot chili oil made from 80% grown peri-peri chili peppers and sunflower oil. I'd like to try that.
Yeah,
some families will use this outrageously spicy peri-peri concoction that has become a national condiment. Most Rwandans will stock up on the sauce during the Christmas season. Akabanga translates to secret in Rwanda. It was created by a Rwandan street food vendor early 1980s to pair with dough fritters he sold from a streetcar. It had a smoke-rich umami flavor with some serious heat. Rwanda, Abagandi, is like ketchup to us. I'm going to try to see if we can find this. And I'm not going to put it on my paragi.
What's odd is he first initially used it on dough fritters. What an odd combination, but I don't know. I haven't tasted it. I want to try it.
That's right.
Akabanga.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? Let's talk about some music.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this is Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music. now back to Christmas music.
So that song that we just heard is called Gloria, and it is by Alan Bernard Mukurandara, widely known as...
I am so happy that you have this episode.
Well, I am too, because I like this song. But he's widely known, thank God, as Alan Muku. He's really well-known, Rwandan figure in music, but also in prosecution and government communication. Besides music, which has always been his passion, he's also interested in law, and he got his law degree and became the national prosecutor and then the spokesperson for the Office of the Prosecutor General of Rwanda.
And a musician. That's great.
Yeah. He's also well-known in the music industry and founded an artist development label to help find and promote new talent and musically gifted children. He composed some popular songs, with one praising the national football team, and this song, Gloria, a Christmas song, is released as a Rwandan Christmas song that's played throughout the country. And as you probably heard, it sort of is inspired by the Christian song, Gloria in Excelsis Deo, Glory to God in the Highest. You sort of pick up that sound as you listen to it. But it was released in 2024. If you look at the video, it has images of Santa Claus, Christmas trees, and various groups and generations dancing to the vibrant rhythms.
It makes me think of the people on Christmas Eve, all dancing in the church. You know, maybe I could play an instrument. I just didn't get the singing part.
Everybody has a different creative outlet. But should we talk about our Silent Bite feature for the night?
Yes.
Last time we talked about Bob's discovery of Etsy. You know, we finally, back, I think it was in our November or December show, we finally got to eat some pierogies. That was a gift to ourselves from a shop called Latvian Goodies. Bob talked about Etsy, go out to Etsy, put in Latvian Goodies. At the time, we weren't able to speak to the baker, Inga. Tonight, we're going to venture out and talk to Inga and talk about her baking business and how she got started from the ground up. We're going to discuss how she turned her passion into a cross-border venture and why she makes pierogi. I mean, you're going to love this, guys. She's awesome. Preparing this food and sharing with others, she honors her heritage and keeps the traditions of her country alive. And so we're going to talk to her about her family and the products she uses. She's going to talk about her cooking methods. She's going to talk about what she likes to maybe drink when she's making and eating pierogies. We actually learned a nickname for them. And so I think it's going to be really cool from now on, Bob, because we're going to start calling them P-Dogs, like her kids and her kids' friends called them. I just think our listeners are going to love and are going to be so impressed how Inga's been able to transfer her love of this homeland food into a thriving business. And she's become a big Festa fan. She has shared our information with other people. And we really appreciate that about Inga. She really has inspired us to be able to take on the endeavor of making these. So
faith in us.
She has no clue. Let's talk to Inga.
Before we burn down our house.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it. Food they put out for Christmas Eve. Eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it. What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a whole bunch.
What's your journey? Like, how did
you... You are Latvian. That's your...
Yeah. My parents were both born in Latvia, and they came over on the boat with, my grandparents. So I spoke Latviskati. I was brought up speaking Latvian. I spoke it with my grandparents. But it's fun to introduce the P-Dogs to people and having people eat them. And I haven't met anybody that doesn't enjoy them. Yeah. So that's nice. Who doesn't like bacon, right?
That's where you won our hearts with the bacon. That was it. Right when we read that, we're like, that sounds awesome.
So Inga, every year what we do in our anniversary show, which is in June, we look back over the year independently. Bob and I will come up with our favorite movies we watched, our favorite songs we listened to, and our favorite foods. And so it was last summer, Bob and I are on our anniversary show. We're comparing, and we got to the food, and we both ended up independently. I mean, literally from over 100 lists of different foods we cover, we both said that our favorite thing that we heard about was the pirog. And we looked at each other like, but this is destiny that we both picked this. And it really has been a year that we've been pursuing
adventure,
more information about this. And so thank you for being a part of our journey and agreeing to it.
Oh, thanks for like having me be a part of the journey. It's great. And I love sharing everything that I know about my Latvian heritage. I love to share it. I mean, I even hate charging people. I probably shouldn't say that, but I really do. I wish I could do it for free. Send P-Dog to everybody and make everybody happy. And I make the best P-Dog.
Yeah.
So, you know, I make the best P-Dog. This is something that all Latvians do say. All Latvians that make P-Dog, they make the best P-Dog. So it's just what we say. My dad says, we all say, no, I make the best P-Dog. No, I, you know, so whenever you meet a Latvian, they're always going to say that they make the best P-Dog, but it's really me.
I don't know if you heard the show where we interviewed the counselor from the Latvian embassy. She did say that. She said her grandmother had the best recipe, and she also said it's really competitive. Everyone wants to make the best.
It's a little joke that I think it's funny because everybody says that. They go really well with beer.
Now we have to mark that down, Mark. Professionally, we're going to have to drink beer when we eat them.
Yes, they go very well with beer, and it's nice if you get the guys that like to drink too much. Here, eat a P-Dog because it sucks up all the beer. You know?
You're talking to two gentlemen who have been known to drink a little bit of beer.
We know about that beer stuff. We've heard of that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Latvian, so a lot of us Latvians enjoy good beer. And I live here in Sheboygan.
Bob and I had tried to find some place to buy them, even in our local Chicago area, because Chicago is very ethnically diverse. And then I found you on Etsy. As our fans know, we actually had a chance to do a live recording as we were first tasting them.
And they were awesome. They were incredible.
Your pirog was very pleasing, very soft.
Oh, the jalapenos.
What did you think of that?
It's awesome. I love that.
I thought they were a little spicy. But you guys like them?
Yes. I loved
it. I did too. Now that you've given us permission to drink beer with them, I mean, come on.
I'm pouring one and I'm going to sit here while I talk.
What I leaned into when we first had them in December is the lightness to them. They're almost fluffy. And that I liked about it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do have to say that. Everybody wants more meat in the middle of the pita, right? Everybody does. It's just a common thing. Stuff more bacon in there. Stuff more bacon in there. Put cheese in there. Do all of this stuff. It becomes too much then. And then the dough around it becomes too much. And as much as you want to make them huge and big and stuff them, and just becomes too much. So you just got to always want more. It's kind of a weird thing, but you always just want more.
Now that I think about it, gosh, I would like some more in there. But it's better to leave us wanting more.
I've tried them with cheese in them and had them all melty. Somehow the cheese melts out. And I'm not a P-Dog police. Some Latvians get very upset, like the jalapeno P-Dog. That's not a P-Dog. Don't call it a P-Dog. P-Dog is just bacon and onions and that's it. No, it doesn't have to be. A P-Dog can be whatever. If I'm Latvian and I'm making it and I call it a P-Dog, it's a P-Dog. Some people just really get mad. I had fun during COVID. COVID, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't go anywhere. Right. So I just made friends all around the world. Just started talking and finding out things.
Because honestly, we did a whole episode on this where I did go online to try to find pirogs that Mark and I could taste. And I went to these Latvian food sites, you know, that you can order Latvian food. None of them had pirogs. I told Mark, it was a big joke. I said, I ended up buying pirog merchandise. The food wasn't available.
They're actually not pierogies. And most Americans actually pronounce them as P-Dogs. P-Dogs. Growing up, when my mom used to make them, my brother's friends would say, hey, Mrs. R, you got any more P-Dogs? We got to roll the R. P-Dog.
P-Dog. P-Dog. Yeah. Practice that. I even tried to find a restaurant in Chicagoland. There's so many diverse cultures in Chicago, but I couldn't even find a bakery or any place downtown that had pirogs.
really easy to make. My grandpa was more of the baker in the family. So he was the one that always made the dough and cut the meat, freeze the bacon, and then you cut it in long slices, and then you snip it. That's how you make the inside for the bacon, and then you dice the onions. But my grandpa would always be in charge of that. And then my mom and my grandma, my old mom, and I, we'd all sit around and make the little pedogs, stuff them and put them over. It's kind of time consuming, but when that's all you do, it goes pretty fast.
Would they play a big role in your Christmas celebration? Did you make them for Christmas time?
Oh, yes. Christmas and Easter were the main things. And then, of course, if anybody requested it for their birthdays, pedog are always welcome.
Do you have a preference of breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or just whenever?
They're really good anytime. It's nice when you can have them for breakfast, but now it's nice when you're having a celebration.
Is this what you do full time?
This is what I do. I do my Etsy sales, and then I do the farmer's market. I do the farmer's market mostly in summertime, but I have done a little bit of the winter's farmer's market.
Is there a big Latvian community there in Sheboygan?
Not really. I believe most of the Latvians are in Chicago. And then I think there are some in Kalamazoo and New York. A lot of my orders come from New York.
Do the Wisconsinites like the pierogi?
Pedog. You got to roll the R. So it's pierog. Like P, and then you got to roll the R.
Pierog.
A lot of people don't know what they are. A lot of people are just like you guys.
Two random American guys who just discovered them.
They don't know what they are. They've never heard of them. A lot of people don't even really know where Latvia is. So if I say I'm Latvian, is that like Russian? And that's the biggest insult, you know? No. So does that mean you're speaking Russian? Yeah. No.
Are they hard to make?
They're not. They're really not hard to make. The dough for me was the hardest thing to figure out. When I got older and I started realizing I wanted to make these, the dough was 3 to 4 cups flour and then a packet of yeast and then 2 cups of milk, 1 stick of butter, 2 tablespoons of sugar and 1 teaspoon of salt. And then, well, I don't know if you guys know how to bake.
Even though my last name is Baker, I am not a baker.
Well, you have to let the dough rise, but you have to mix the yeast in with the milk and let it foam a little bit, the warmness, and then you can put the sugar in there. And I usually melt the butter with it, and then you have all the warm liquid together, and then you add it to the flour and the yeast so you don't burn the yeast. You don't want it really hot. And then you mix it and let it sit for about an hour, let it rise, and then there you have your dough. The filling is really easy. That's just the bacon and the onions. You use 1 big onion and 1 pound of bacon. You always want to have really good bacon. You don't want a real fatty. Then there'll be a lot of fat in the pedog, and you don't want all of that.
What kind of bacon do you use? Like, what?
Yeah, I'm going to get to the bacon.
I'm not telling. No, I'm just kidding. I actually use our local butcher here in Sheboygan. So I use Meesfields. And it's nice because they already have it all cut up. Cutting bacon into little chunks is the hardest thing. We usually do it when it's frozen. Mm-hmm. But even then, it's really hard. And if you got arthritis, if it's not frozen, then it's just really greasy. And it's just impossible. So Meesfields has smoked apples and jalapeno and pepper. So they got all sorts of bacon. So it's really nice. It's ready to go. So I just put the pound in there, dice the onions. The time-consuming part is actually making the pedog. Once your dough is risen, you kind of just stick it in there and then you close it. I use a little cookie cutter. Everybody kind of does it different. We used to use a glass. I use a cookie cutter now, but back in the day, we used a little glass. And then you got to pinch and seal over, pinch and seal over, pinch and seal.
When you were little with your grandparents, would you have to chop up the bacon?
Didn't have to. No, my grandpa did that. Grandpa was in charge of that. It's just recently, within the last 2.5 years, that I found Meesfield's bacon. So it's very new that I found this cut up bacon like this.
Can you tell by the people who order them? Are most people Latvian? Can you tell from their last names?
I can tell they have a Latvian last name. A lot of Latvian last names are actual words. My last name is Rozīt, which means rosebud. You'll get a Vilt, and that means wolf. There are some people that have an American name, but I think they married America. Right. But I think most people are Latvian just because otherwise, how would they know about them?
If you were to give us your top five tips for when we sit down to cook these, I think one is make sure the bacon is frozen. I think that's one.
Find it from your local butcher. Definitely always the local butcher, because then you'll get the best bacon. You want the bacon that's the good stuff. And then I would say...
Do you ever use smoked bacon? Because we've seen that too.
Oh, yeah, where they that's say, all I use. Smoked bacon, yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's
good. Always, yeah. A lot of times, I don't fry up my bacon before I put it in the pitog. A lot of people say that's a big no-no. I don't ever remember frying up the bacon. I think that would not taste very good.
We know it's got to be smoked. If you can't get it already cut, cut it when it's frozen. Now, how about onion in bacon? Equal parts? More bacon than onion?
Always more bacon than onion. You want a pound of bacon and then just a nice big onion.
I'm talking like I know what this means, but aren't there red onions, white onions, yellow? Does it matter which kind?
You want to use a yellow onion because you want to taste the onion.
And it seems like, Inga, we should probably have a beer when we make these.
Yeah, those were the good old days. I remember when I used to make pitog for everybody, all the family and the events. That's before I was getting paid for them. And it was like, yay, pitog day. Yeah, you know.
So you would have a pirog day. Everyone would get together to make them?
It was just me and my husband. It wasn't like a pitog day, but it was just a fun day where we would get together and have some beers. And you would make them Saturday, like Saturday before Easter. It's like, all right, here we go. We're making pitog today. You know, if we made them on Thursday before Christmas.
I'm curious, on pirog day, would your husband have duties?
Oh, yeah. Well, besides doing the cleanup and the dishes and all of that, he would have to egg them. I almost forgot about that part.
Oh.
So once they're on the pan and they're closed and they're looking like the little crescent moon shape, I think they more look like a half a moon, like the bottom is flat and then it's rounded on the top. Then you beat up an egg in a cup and then you brush them and you brush an egg on top of them. So that's how they turn a nice golden brown.
Nice brown.
So that was his job.
Bob, I'll do that.
I was going to say my job is to open and bring the beers.
Well, you can come up anytime. Just give me notice and we can all make pitog together.
I'm feeling a lot more confident, Bob, after talking to Inga. How about you?
Inga, you have made it seem like we can do this and we can have fun doing it.
Anybody can do this. It's simple. It's easy. The only thing is closing the pitog. So you take a little piece of dough. So you flatten it out. And then you maybe put like about a tablespoon of the bacon and onion mixture in there. Mm-hmm. And then when you fold it over, when I fold it over, I kind of have my thumb in there, like both thumbs. And then I'll twist it over. And then you want both of the dough parts to meet, almost like a half moon shape. And then you want to pinch the pitog shut. And then you want to fold it over so it doesn't open. A lot of times the pitog will bust open and we call them smiling pitogs. But they're all smiling with their bacon showing. They're still good. A lot of people like those. Those you can eat right away. So you don't have to wait for any kind of special occasion or anything to eat them. Like wait till everybody gets here or can't eat them until tomorrow because it's Easter. You can eat those right away because nobody wants to show those.
I call them naked pirogs.
Shocking.
Once you got that, it'll be time consuming the first time, but you guys are going to be great.
All right. I'm thinking, look, you told us all the tricks. We got to go to a butcher and get really good smoked bacon. If we can't get it chopped up, we're going to freeze it and chop it up ourselves. We use clearly more bacon than the yellow onion, but we use a yellow onion. And Mark has his job where he's going to egg them. I'm excited, Mark. I think in our day is coming. We're going to make this for our anniversary show. So we probably have one more month and we're going to do it.
Oh, I'm excited about that. I can't wait to see.
This has been great. Yes. I really appreciate you taking the time and playing along with us.
Yeah, it's been great.
This has been awesome.
And we'll let you know when this goes live, too.
We will.
Thank you guys so much. You guys are great. Yeah.
All right, Bob, you ready for some trivia about Rwanda?
Yes. I don't really know much about it, so this will be exciting.
It's trivia.
Trivia. Rwanda's recent painful and tragic chapter in the 1990s kind of diminishes the vibrancy of this country and its endless beautiful scenery. Rwanda is called the Land of a Thousand Hills because its landscapes is dominated by rolling hills and small mountains. I never knew that.
No, I did not know that. I don't know why I think of plains and savannas. I don't think of mountains necessarily.
No, me either. And it's important that this dark period they had doesn't define the entire story. Instead, we wanted to show remarkable resilience and determination. And it's really undergone a significant rebuilding and reconciliation and emerging as one of Africa's fastest developing nations today, with its growing economy, wildlife tourism, and efforts to promote unity and national progress. So there's some important trivia that we have to share. Like, Rwanda ranks number 5 in the World Economic Forum's Gender Equality Index, which measures the gaps in resources and opportunities between men and women.
Are you kidding? Would you have thought that at all?
Not based on their history, Bob. I wouldn't.
Oh, no. Wow.
And a strong sense of this fairness came out of the 1994 genocide, and it has dominated culture and policy ever since. Oh, and this next piece also. How about the fact that this country has banned plastic bags since 2008, and airport security will confiscate any plastic bags carried in by visitors?
The TSA is going to pat you down to see if you have plastic bags.
Or, this is probably one of my favorite things I learned, is that in Rwanda, the last Saturday of each month is called Umugande, which means coming together in common purpose. When adult Rwandans are required to join in countrywide cleanup tasks like picking up litter.
That is a great thing. And I should tell our listeners, Mark and I one time went with Mark and we cleaned up the bike trail.
We did. We did our Umugande day. Also, we thought it'd be interesting to talk about the hundreds of bars in Rwanda that serve milk, where you can throw back a frothy glass of Ikivugada, which is fermented milk topped with honey or sugar.
So they have milk bars.
Yeah, I think they lost me there. All right. So all those things are interesting. But we want to know, in 2016, the Rwandan Football Federation passed strict measures and significant fines to curb the use of what in the sport? 2016, the Rwandan Football Federation passed strict measures and significant fines to curb the use of what in the sport?
Fermented milk?
Works for me. If you know, we have something for you that is incredibly rare and precious as the mountain gorillas that are found in the mist-covered forest in Volcanoes National Park. This prize is unique, special, and exists only in a few places in the world. Yes, we mean the 4F sticker, which our fans protect and celebrate because their presence is something to treasure. These stickers are limited and endangered, so they rely on human care and protection to survive. By answering our trivia question, you will become a steward of these incredible stickers to ensure that future generations will still have the chance to own them. Supporting our podcast through donations and spreading awareness helps to protect our habitat and community. Each act of support contributes to the continued survival of these bright and colorful stickers. We beg you to take part in preserving one of the world's most extraordinary stickers and an important part of the festive foreign film fans' natural heritage. So send your answers to festivefans@gmail.com.
Every episode, I'm like, wow, these stickers sound just amazing.
They don't sound amazing. They are amazing. Just like my quote by Deborah Whipp. Like snowflakes, my Christmas memories gather and dance. Each are beautiful, unique, and gone too soon.
I love it when I've never heard these before, these quotes. That's a great one.
You know, we unknowingly picked two countries with a similar dark past marked by ethnic cleansing and deep social division. Although this was unintentional, we do recognize how each country has taken steps to acknowledge these past injustices and build a more stable and inclusive future. And really, what's more Christmas than that?
It was odd that we put these two together without even really thinking about it. Not knowing much about the two countries and then going through and reliving their past experience and then seeing how they've turned it around. It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, and just even how Rwanda is really trying to do very specific things and are having measurable impact, like the gap between what's accessible for men and women. They have a close, narrow gap for those opportunities. Rwanda ranks fifth. I'd be curious where the U.S. stands.
Thinking about Rwanda, it makes me think of what it must have been like to live in Nazi Germany and then what happened in 94 in Rwanda. Do you want to believe that you would be one of those people that would say, I could never do that? But some people got caught up in
it. I had that thought. What would I do? Well, Bob, once again, we've had a great evening together. Can't wait to meet next month to do some more shows.
Absolutely, Mark. I'm going to go head out to a milk bar. How about you?
I'm going to go have a shot of whiskey. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Mark.
Done, done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.